4. Picking up his Line 1 phone, Willis Graham, Council Chairman of the Extraordinary Committee for Public Safety, bantering, said,
"How's the capture of Provoni coming, Director? Any new news?"
He chuckled. God knew where Thoris Provoni was. Probably dead long ago on some airless planetoid far away. Police Director Lloyd Barnes said stonily,
"Are you speaking of media releases, sir?"
He laughed.
"Tell me what the TV and the papers are blabbing about now."
He could, of course, turn his own TV set on without having even to get out of bed, but he enjoyed raking his stuffed shirt police director over the coals re the Thoris Provoni situation. The color of Barnes' face usually proved interesting in a morbid sort of way. And being an unusual of the highest order, Graham could enjoy firsthand the chaos in the man's mind when it came to anything dealing with the topic of the runaway traitor. After all, it had been Director Barnes who had released Thoris Provoni from a federal prison 10 years ago, as rehabilitated.
"Provoni is going to narrowly slip through our fingers again," Barnes said gloomily.
"Why don't you say he's dead?"
It would have enormous psychological consequences on the population, and along the lines he would have liked to see.
"If he shows up here again, the basis of our situation would be jeopardized by merely showing up."
"Where's my breakfast?" Graham asked. "Tell them to bring it in."
"Yes, sir," Barnes said, nettled. "And what do you want? Eggs and toast? Fried ham?"
"Is there really ham available?" Graham asked. "Make it ham, with 3 chicken eggs. But make sure nothing's ersatz."
Not enjoying his servant role, Barnes muttered,
"Yes, sir,"
and got off the line. Willis Graham lay back against the pillows. One of his personal men immediately manifested himself and expertly propped the pillows up exactly as they should have been. "Now where's the damn paper?" Graham asked himself and held out his hand to receive it. Another of his personal staff members noted his gesture and adroitly produced the current 3 editions of the Times. For a time, he leafed through the first sections of the great old newspaper, now government-controlled.
"Eric Corden," he said at last, making a motion with his right hand to show that he wished to dictate.
At once, a scribe appeared, portable transcriber in hand.
"To all council members," Graham said, "we cannot claim Provoni's death for reasons which Director Barnes has pointed out, but we can deliver Eric Corden. I mean, we can execute him. And what a great relief that will be."
Almost, he thought, like getting Thoris Provoni himself. Throughout the Undermen network, Eric Corden was the most admired organizer and speaker, and there were, of course, his many books. Corden was a true old man intellectual, a theoretical physicist who could inspire a great group response among other disenchanted old men who longed for the ancient days, who would, if he could, put the clock back 50 years. Corden, however, despite his unique forensic ability, was a thinker, not a doer, as was Provoni. Thoris Provoni, the man of action who had roared off to get help, as Corden, his one-time friend, had reported in endless speeches, books, and grubby tracts. Corden was popular, but, unlike Provoni, Corden was not a public menace. With his execution, he would leave a void which he had really never properly filled. He was, despite his public appeal, strictly small fry. But much of the old men population did not understand that. Hero worship surrounded Eric Corden. Provoni was an abstract hope. Corden existed. And he worked and wrote and spoke here on Earth. Picking up the Line 2 phone, he said,
"Get me Corden on the big screen, Miss Knight."
He hung up, settled back in his bed, and once again snooped into the articles in the newspaper.
"Further dictation, Council Chairman?"
the scribe inquired after an interval of time.
"Oh, yes."
Graham pushed the newspaper aside.
"Where was I?
I mean, we can execute him. And what I...
To continue, Graham said, clearing his throat. I want all department heads, are you getting this, to grasp and understand the reasons behind my desire to finish off... What's his name?
Eric Corden, the scribe said.
Yes, Graham nodded. Why we must destroy Eric Corden is as follows. Corden is a link between the old men of Earth and Thor's Provoni. As long as Corden is alive, people feel the presence of Provoni. Without Corden, they have no contact, real or otherwise, with that ratty space bastard out there somewhere. In a sense, Corden is the voice for Provoni while Provoni is gone. I admit that this might backfire. The old man might riot for a time. But on the other hand, this might bring the Undermen out of hiding where we could get at them. In a sense, I'm about to deliberately spark a premature show of force by the Undermen. There will be wild waves as soon as Corden's death is announced, but ultimately...
He broke off. On the big screen, which comprised the far wall of his great bedroom, a face had begun to ignite. A thin, aesthetic face with hollows about the jaw. A weak jaw, Graham reflected as he saw the jaw move with speech. Rimless glasses, meager hair in the form of carefully combed strands across an otherwise bald head.
Sound,
Graham instructed, as Corden's lips continued to move inaudibly.
Pleasure,
Corden boomed as the sound came on too loudly.
I know how busy you are, sir, but if you wish to speak to me...
Corden gestured elegantly.
I'm ready.
To one of his bedside aides, Graham said,
Where the hell is he now?
In Brightforth Prison.
You getting enough to eat?
Graham asked the image on the big screen.
Very much so, yes.
Corden smiled, showing teeth so even as to seem, and probably were, false.
And you're free to write?
Corden said.
I have the materials.
Tell me, Corden, Graham said energetically. Why do you write and say those damn things? You know they're not true.
Truth is in the eye of the beholder,
Corden chuckled in his thin, humorless way.
You know that trial a few months ago, Graham asked, where you were sentenced to 16 years in prison for treason? Well, goddammit, the judges have gone back and eradicated the specifications of your punishment. They've now decided on the death penalty.
No expression appeared on Corden's bleak face.
Can he hear me?
Graham asked an aide.
Oh, yes, sir. He hears you all right.
Graham said,
We're gonna execute you, Corden. You know I can read your mind. I know how afraid you are.
It was true. Inside, Corden quaked. Even though their contact remained purely electronic, with Corden himself actually 2,000 miles away. Psionic capacities like this always baffled the old men, and frequently the new men as well. Corden said nothing, but it was obvious that he grasped the fact that Graham had begun to feel him out telepathically.
Down underneath, Graham said, you're thinking, maybe I should bolt. Provoni is dead.
I don't think Provoni is dead,
Corden broke in, showing outrage, his first genuine facial expression.
Subconsciously, Graham said, you're not even aware of it.
Even if Thor's were dead.
Oh, come off it, Graham said. You know and I know that if Provoni were dead, you'd drop your agitation and propaganda enterprises and creep off out of public sight for the rest of your damn ineffectual life.
A buzzer in the communications apparatus to Graham's right all at once squeaked into life.
Pardon me,
Graham said, and pressed a switch.
Your wife's attorney is here, Council Chairman. You left word that he was to be let in no matter what you were doing. Shall I send him on in, or...
Send him in,
Graham said. To Corden, he said.
We'll notify you, Director Barnes, most probably, an hour before your scheduled death. Goodbye, I'm busy now.
He made a motion, and the wall-sized screen dribbled into opaqueness. The central bedroom door opened, and a slim, tall, well-dressed gentleman with a short beard strode briskly into the room, briefcase in hand. Horace Denfeld, who always dressed this way.
Do you know what I read in Eric Corden's mind just now? Graham said. Subconsciously, he wishes he'd never joined the Undermen, and here he is, the leader of it, to the extent that they have a leader. I'm going to obliterate their existence, starting with Corden. Do you approve of my ordering Corden's execution?
Seating himself, Denfeld unzipped his briefcase. According to Irma's instructions and my professional advice, we have changed several clauses, minor ones, in the separate maintenance agreement. Here.
He handed a folio, a document, to Graham.
Take your time, Council Chairman.
What will happen when Corden is gone?
Graham asked, as he unfolded the legal-sized sheets of paper and began reading here and there. In particular, he scanned the passages marked in red. Denfeld said offhandedly,
I couldn't even manage to guess, sir.
Minor clauses, Graham mocked with bitterness as he read. Jeez Christ! She's up to child support from 200 pops a month to 4!
He shuffled among the pages, feeling the edges of his ears glow with wrath and with stunned dismay.
And the alimony up from 3,000 to 5! And...
He reached the last sheet. It was strewn with red lines and sums penciled in.
Half my travel expenses. She gets that. And all of what I make for paid speeches.
His neck had become grimy and soggy with warm, stinging sweat.
But she's allowing you to keep all your earnings from written material, which you...
There isn't any written material! Who do you think I am, Eric Corden?
He tossed the papers brusquely under the bed. For a time, he sat steaming. Partly from what he had just now read, and partly because of the attorney, Horace Denfeld, who was a new man. Low as he was in the general new man's standings, Denfeld considered all unusuals, including the council chairman, merely a pseudo-evolvement. Graham could pick it up from Denfeld's mind, that low, constant level of superiority and contempt. Graham said,
I'll have to think it over.
I'll show it to my own attorneys, he said to himself. The best government attorneys there are, those in the tax branch.
I want you to consider one thing, sir, Denfeld said. In a way, it may seem to you that it's unfair of Mrs. Graham to ask so, he searched for the word, so large a share in your property.
The house, Graham agreed, and the 4 apartment buildings in Scranton, PA, all that and now this.
But... Denfeld pointed out smoothly, his tongue flitting about his lips like a paper streamer dancing in the wind. It is essential that your separating from your wife must at all costs be kept secret for yourself. For the fact that a council chairman of the Extraordinary Committee for Public Safety cannot let a breath of, well, shall we say, La Calunia?
What's that?
Scandal. There can't be a scandal for any high-ranking unusual or new man, anyhow, as you well know. But this, plus your position.
I'll resign, Graham grated, before I sign that. 5,000 pops alimony a month, she's insane!
He raised his head and scrutinized Denfeld.
What happens to a woman when she's getting a separate maintenance or a divorce? They want everything, nailed down or otherwise. The house, the apartments, the car, all the pops in the world.
God, he thought, and rubbed his forehead wearily. To one of his servants, he said,
Get me my coffee.
Yes, sir.
The aide fiddled with the coffee maker, handed him his black, strong espresso cup. To the aide and to everyone in the room, Graham said, appealing to them,
What can I do? She's got me.
He placed the folio of documents in the drawer of his bedside desk.
There's nothing more to discuss, he said to Denfeld. My attorneys will let you know my decision.
He glowered at Denfeld, whom he did not like at all.
Now I have other business.
He nodded to an aide, who put his firm hand on the attorney's shoulder and guided him toward one of the doors leading out of the bedroom. After the door had shut behind Denfeld, Graham lay back, meditating and drinking his coffee. If only she'd break a law. He said to himself, even a traffic law, anything to get her behind in her relationship to the police. If we caught her jaywalking, we could make it stick. She could resist arrest, use foul and obscene language in public,
be a public menace by virtue of the fact that she had deliberately flouted the law, and, he thought, if only Barnes' people could catch her on a felony rap, for example, buying and or drinking alcohol. Then, his own attorneys had explained this, we could hit her with an unfit mother suit, take the children, put the blame on her in a true divorce action, which, under those circumstances, we could make public. But, as it stood, Irma had too many things on him. A contested divorce would make him look bad indeed, what with what Irma could scrape together out of the gutter. Picking up his line one phone, he said, Barnes, I want you to get hold of that cop dame, that Alice Noyes, and send her in here. Maybe you should come along, too. Police Ossifer Noyes headed the team, which had been trying for almost 3 months to get something on Irma. 24 hours a day, his wife was monitored by police video and audio gadgetry, without her knowledge, of course. In fact, one video camera scanned the happenings in Irma's bathroom, which unfortunately had not turned up anything to speak of. Everything Irma said, did, everyone she saw, every place she went, all on reels of tape at PSS Central in Denver. And it added up to nothing. She's got her own police, he realized gloomily. Ex-PSS flatheads who roamed about with her when she went shopping or to a party or to Dr. Radcliffe, her dentist. I've got to get rid of her, he said to himself. I should never have married an old man wife. But it had happened long ago when he did not hold the high position which had become his later on. Every unusual and every new man sneered at him in private, and he did not like it. He read thoughts, lots of them, emanating from many, many people, and buried there somewhere lay the contempt. It was exceptionally great among the new men. While he lay waiting for Director Barnes and Ossifer Noyes, he examined the Times once again, opening it at random to one of its 300 pages, and found himself confronted by an article on the Great Ear Project, an article which called the byline of Amos Ild, a very well-placed new man, someone Graham could not touch. Well, the Great Ear experiment is just rolling merrily along, he thought sardonically as he read. Thought to be beyond the scope of probability, work on the first purely electronic telepathic listening device advances at a reassuring rate. Officials of McMally Corporation, the designer and builder of Great Ear, as it has come to be called, said today in a press conference attended by many skeptical observers. When Great Ear goes into operation, Munro Kapp opined, it will be capable of telepathically monitoring the thought waves of tens of thousands of persons, and with the ability, not found among unusuals, to unscramble these enormous flood tides of... He tossed the paper away. It fell with a noisy thump to the deep pile of the carpeted floor. Those new men bastards, he said savagely to himself, his teeth grinding impotently. They'll pour billions of pops into it. And after Great Ear, they'll build a device which can replace precog unusuals, then all the rest, one by one. There'll be poltergeist machines rolling along the streets and buzzing through the air. We won't be needed. And instead of the strong and stable two-party government, which they now had, there would be a one-party system, a monolithic monster with new men holding all key posts at all levels. Goodbye to civil service. Except to tests for new man cortical activity that double-domed neutral logics with such postulates as a thing is equal to its opposite and the greater the discrepancy, the greater the congruity. Christ! Maybe, he thought, the whole structure of new man thought is a gigantic put-on. We can't understand it. The old men can't understand it. We take their word for it that it's a whole new step upward in the evolution of human brain functioning. Admittedly, there are those Rogers nodes or whatever. There is a physical, different structure of their cerebral cortex, but... One of his intercoms clicked on. Director Barnes and a woman police officer are... Send them in, Graham said. He leaned back, made himself comfortable, folded his arms, and waited. Waited to tell them his new idea.